It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
6-7.
Okay. Ooh.
I'm so cool.
It's Mike Shope.
That's already over.
Oh, yeah?
I think so.
Well, then I'm going to really pick up on it.
And the Bulldog.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Why was 5 afraid of 6?
Because 6-8-7.
Because 7-8-9.
7-8-9.
I trapped you.
It didn't even make sense.
He trapped me.
Hate puns. Riddles.
Jokes and fun.
Numbers.
And laughing and smiling.
The show. Everything.
6-7!
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
I really think it's quite possible that in a long list of preposterously ridiculous things that I've done on the radio, that maybe is the worst. This is not a thing you could. I've never been one who would like. I'm not the dad that would ask when my kids were little. I never asked them that question. So like, it's not like locked and loaded for you. But still, what are you doing? What did I even say there? Like the numbers, it doesn't make sense. It's not hard. It's not even. It's not math. It's just talking. Aaron Quinn from Cover One is on the Worcester Outline with us. You're on the air with a moron, Aaron. I don't know if you are happy about that, but that's what you signed up for by answering my call.
Well, fitting that you have me on then, because I'm in good company. Fit right in there. Yeah, no, my kids are always asking me for those dad jokes. I never have them. All mine are too inappropriate to tell my kids at their ages, so I'll have to wait till they're your son's age so I can really give them my repertoire of jokes.
I'm the guy that leaned on John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd when my kids were like 7 and 5. Yeah. Like, let's watch the Blues Brothers and all of its inappropriate jokes. Okay, good.
Well, I will say, don't give yourself too hard of a time, though. You guys, I don't envy. You guys spend so much time on air. I only do an hour once a week, and I say dumb stuff in that hour. I couldn't imagine the hit rate of dumb things I would say if I was on the air as long as you are.
Right, well, we'll see what we can do here in the 20 minutes or so we've got together.
Yeah.
How's the summer going, man? How is the family? Are your boys? How many of your boys are playing golf?
I got both of them in junior golf here in the town,
right,
which is a fantastic program. We're super lucky here in Western New York that it's accessible, right, to folks like us that can go out and play. And so they're both learning the game a little bit. But yeah, that summer, trying to keep them busy, man. I got these kids in about everything I can do just to keep them out busy. But the AC is working extra, and I know you're off next week, and it's looking great. I heard you got some golf lined up.
I got some golf lined up, and I'm looking forward to it. We'll see how much the 61-year-old body can handle on back-to-backs. Yeah. It's a quick turnaround. I've got a Sunday late afternoon and then early Monday morning, and that could be, you know, it'd be a lot. I might need like a leave drip or something to get through the day.
Porch beers help, I hear.
Yes, normally they do. Yes, indeed. Well, yeah. Aaron, how it's been so long? Like, we've not touched base, so there's a lot to sort of pour over here. What's your overall on the Bills' status right now? They're one of the top favorites in the AFC for the Super Bowl. They and the Ravens, like, that's unchanged. And as much as I respect the betting markets and the odds, I feel a little bit like there should be more respect given to the changes that have happened here. And I feel like assuming it's all just going to be full speed ahead because they've got 17, as much as I love him and respect his game, I don't know. I feel like there's just a little bit too much of shrugging off new system on defense and Joe Brady, first-time head coach. I don't know. What's your overall right now?
Yeah, I'm trying to find what the pulse is, right? Because everything I'm seeing, like you're saying, betting markets, national media, everyone still has the Bills as one of those top contenders in the AFC. But like locally, when you're talking to people, and I don't know if this is just us kind of becoming an entitled fan base in some ways of just, you know, they've been so good in the regular season, but it hasn't led to the success people have wanted. So, you know, it's kind of a, oh, I'll believe it when I see it type of mentality from the fan base. But the excitement doesn't feel like it normally does this many weeks out from training camp, right? Like it has in the past. And so that's a weird thing I'm trying to wrap my head around. And I think it's probably somewhere in the middle of the local vibe I'm getting and the national vibe. I think you're right There's a lot of questions. I think many in the national media are just assuming because Joe Brady was here and the offense was really good, that is going to stay intact. But him becoming a head coach is a big unknown, right? We know whatever you want to say about Sean McDermott, you could go back through many seasons, whether it was, you know, all the COVID stuff, DeMar Hamlin, having to move games in the middle of the season. Something sort of always came up where you needed that type of leadership that I think he provided. And that's an unknown in this Joe Brady era, is the marathon of the season. Like, I know he's a good offensive mind. I think the guys like him and they'll rally around him. But there's another element of leading a group of men that we just don't know how he's going to handle it. And I think the same is true on Jim Leonard, who I'm a little bit more excited about as a defensive coordinator than I am about Joe Brady as a head coach. And there's still a lot of unknown, right? Like, he wasn't the defensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos. And I think we all point to how good that defense was and kind of associate that with Jim Leonard. And while I like Jim Leonard, I like what he did at Wisconsin, I think he's a bright young mind, I don't think this is going to be the iteration of the Jim Leonard defense that necessarily he wants. It won't be a finished product in the first year because these aren't all his guys, right? He's using pieces and parts from a previous defense that he has to kind of morph into maybe something that isn't his preferred style of defense because he doesn't have all the guys to run exactly how he would want to. So I think there will be some growing pains, but I don't think that should stop anyone from being excited. You said it. You still have 17. You still have a lot of, you still have James Cook, one of the best running backs in football. You still have one of the better offensive lines in football. I like the skill position room. There are talented players on the defensive side of the ball that I think scheme could get a little bit more out of than we've seen in the last couple of years from the Sean McDermott era. So there's things to be excited about, but kind of just trying to feel out where this team's going to be, man.
You use the word morph there, and that's a big, the fact that you've got, I know Landon Jackson put on weight. I think I've read about Deion Walker dropping weight, and like, I don't know, when I get to like, I'm changing guys' bodies, like they did this with AJ Epenesa, I feel like twice, right? Was he light when he got here and they wanted him to be heavy, and then they said, no, you should actually go back to light, or vice versa, whatever that was. Whenever you get into that, anything can work, and maybe both of those guys will be important pieces here. Jackson had a lost year, basically. Walker, I thought, was a guy that might have even salvaged the whole draft class with how well he played. And so I think the arrow is pointing up on him, but when you're asking guys to alter their bodies, I worry about in one off season that's where I go, okay, do I have the guys I need here, or is this going to be a work in progress? The best I can do to get, because I like the Leonard hire. It was certainly one of the guys that was at or near the top of the list in my mind going into the process. So I'm glad that they reeled him in. Maybe the most optimistic I can get about it, if you know, you share a concern like I do about the personnel and whether they've got the right pieces or not, is that maybe that gets figured out as the year goes on, and he figures out how to use different guys in different ways or whatever, and maybe they're really running hot by the time we get to the end, and that's what matters the most.
Yeah, the first point, I do agree with you. The PR stuff of the spring where it's like, oh, so-and-so comes in looking so big, or he gained this weight. You can put weight on a mediocre player. It's not going to make them an elite player, right? Like, there's still some things. Landon Jackson specifically, that type of athletic frame, he's not super bendy. Like, he doesn't have the type of athleticism that I like. And I know people kind of want to kick him in, and he's done some of that stuff in the past, and maybe the size will help. But to me, that's a guy fighting for a roster spot, right? Like, he's trying to find a way to cling to a roster spot. And I think, you know, a Dwayne Carter is another example of that, a guy that's putting on weight, trying to find a way to stay on a roster. But in terms of the other guys, and I know on the defensive line and even in the linebacker room, there's some questions on the fits and the types for in this transition to all the talk about a 3-4 in the Jim Leonard defense. But the thing that gives me at least optimism of this is the type of coach that I've seen Jim Leonard be when he was in Wisconsin, and what we know of him from his time in Denver and just some of the clinics you can watch. One of my biggest frustrations of the Sean McDermott era, as much as I like Sean McDermott and the success this team had, it felt like he often wanted players to kind of fit the mold of his scheme. And I think Jim Leonard's a little bit the opposite, where he does have an idealistic version of what the scheme should be, in his opinion, but he's going to put players in a position to be successful. So I think he'll bend his scheme mm-hmm. more to the talent that's in the room, where Sean McDermott was so into his own scheme at times that I don't know that he always fit it to the players that he had. He didn't always work with the ingredients list that he was given to do it the right way. He just expected those guys to play their 1 of 11 within the scheme. And I think Leonard will be a little bit more freestyle, if you will, especially in this first year where he doesn't have all the fits that he would like.
I'm glad you mentioned Dwayne Carter, because I think I've made this mistake at least one other time. I think I'm confusing him and Deion Walker. Carter I read about putting on weight too, like Jackson, and I think I made the thing about Walker up. It's in the wrong shelf in my brain, I think. So I'm glad I think we got that corrected. Aaron Quinn from Cover One on the West Hur Hotline with us. How do you think overall they'll do as far as pass rush goes? I mean, we've seen the addition of Bradley Chubb and the draft pick of TJ Parker. I think if they get any kind of a boost in pass rush, it's not so much going to be like that somebody goes and gets 12 or 15 sacks, but I think the scheme might just generate more pressure, and like overall they may just get more sacks. But I'm not sure they have still a hellraiser there unless Rousseau is freed up with the new position.
Yeah, this is going to be a very interesting thing to see, because I actually think the pass rush itself wasn't as bad as it felt. The problem with Sean McDermott and this defense was that it never came through in the big games and the big moments that you needed the pass rush to come through. So you had some statistics that looked okay for the regular season, but in the big moments, that pass rush wasn't able to generate the type of pressure you need against the elite teams and the elite quarterbacks. Where I think Jim Leonard is going to do that with scheme. I am a little bit worried about the personnel in terms of just a guy that can line up and win one-on-one consistently. I don't know that they have that type of pass rusher. That's kind of was my disappointment in the TJ Parker pick. I'm hoping he proves me wrong, that he can be a guy that can win some of that one-on-one. He doesn't necessarily win in the way that I like to see edges win, and that's something this spring I've been going through is, you know, the Bills aren't going to probably go get that bendy, super athletic edge that I'm looking for in terms of like the aesthetic of an end. But that doesn't mean these guys can't win and get pressure, right? There's plenty of different types of guys, and they all win in different ways. Last year, I got a little bit killed because I was this time of year I was super high on Greg Rousseau, and I thought he was going to ascend into a top 15 type defensive end. And I think he played really well. I really do. I think he still is on the cusp, and he had some big moments as the season wound down. He didn't quite get to where I thought his ceiling could get to. That doesn't mean he's not going to. I think he could still do that this year. But you didn't pair him with the type of guy that I think makes him a better pass rusher. You paired him with a guy that's almost a mirror image of him and Bradley Chubb. And so I'm interested to see how they're able to generate, you know, if they just line up guys on the line, are they able to generate pass rush? Or is this something that Jim Leonard's going to have to bring some delayed pressures, bring some creepers, bring some different looks, bring a safety down into the box and blitzing Dorian Williams, right? And trying to generate pressure through scheme. And I do think that, again, is the thing that gives me optimism to maybe throw a little bit more at some of these elite quarterbacks in those big moments, is Jim Leonard isn't scared to kind of get a little bit ballsy with the blitz packages and do some more creeper stuff that at times Sean McDermott kind of, again, leaned back into the scheme and, hey, we'll just play our coverage and rush four and hope that that works. I don't think you'll get that type of thing from Leonard. I think he'll be more aggressive trying to create that pressure.
How do you like the back end? I'll skip the middle for now because the linebacking core might be a little sketchy at this point. Sure. I was talking with Nate Geary about this yesterday, and you just the secondary, I wonder if they might not sort of be back to being a strength of the team. I really like Bishop. And I think he's someone who took a step last year, and if there's another step, that could be really good. Even if he just plateaus, I still think you've got a very good player there. I'm very excited and intrigued by C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and I wonder. I've told Sal this a few times. Like I haven't gotten anybody to take my action, but I might bet that IGB beats out Maxwell Hairston.
That's interesting. Something Greg and I kind of were talking about a little bit yesterday. We did our linebacker show, but we were kind of talking, like, there is so many unknowns, right? Like, we assume maybe certain guys in the linebacker room, like a Dorian Williams or a Max Harrison, you know, in that Sean McDermott era, the vets that were established, even if they weren't that good, even if they were just mediocre, sort of had a leg up going into camp on maybe some of the new additions, right? And those guys had to earn their way into those spots. It's a clean slate for a lot of these guys. So they are invested in a Max Harrison, right? But that doesn't mean that he's guaranteed a job in this defense. But I will say that back end might be the thing I'm most excited about with this Jim Leonard defense. Obviously, he cut his teeth in the league on the back end. Yep. I think he's done incredible things both at Wisconsin and in the Broncos with some of the players on the back end of defenses. I think the player that's probably going to benefit the most from Jim Leonard is Cole Bishop. I am expecting a huge leap forward. Last year was a fantastic foundation for him. I think that's his floor, which is absolutely great. I think the Bills are going to have a long-term safety answer there as a floor. And then you said it, adding a guy like C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I didn't like that last year when people wanted the trade for the Sean McDermott defense. I didn't like him as a fit in the Sean McDermott defense. I didn't think that was a good fit at all. In the Jim Leonard defense, I absolutely really love this next to Cole Bishop. I think there's a lot of things you can do with the two of those guys. And I think a guy that's going to be really sneaky as a utility weapon in this defense is Jalen Kilgore. I absolutely loved that draft pick. I hope I'm not getting a little bit too ahead of myself on the excitement of him, because he is still a draft pick. He is going to have to develop. But I think the Bills are in a great position. They have two starting caliber safeties, so they don't need him to come in and be a starting safety right away. They have the nickel sort of figured out as well, I think. I think they can really put him in as that hybrid piece that the NFL is starting to kind of go towards, which might help with the other conversation that we'll have here at the linebacker position, some of these hybrid type guys that they have on that back end. So I like a lot of the pieces. And if you go back and watch some of the Wisconsin film, especially on third downs, right? Third down was a big issue last year for the Buffalo Bills. If it was third and 10 or more, it was almost a guarantee the other team was going to pick that up. Go back and watch the Rose Bowl, Wisconsin versus Oregon. Justin Herbert, Jim Leonard put on an absolute clinic on third downs. And I know that's college and it might not translate to the NFL, but just the type of looks and adding defensive backs to the field, and you don't know where guys are coming from. You don't know who's in, who's down, who's up. That's the kind of stuff that just tricks quarterbacks. And we just haven't seen anything like that in Buffalo. So I'm really excited about this back end group. And I know there was a lot of conversation about Christian Benford this past week because Jeremy Fowler's executive scouts report, and he didn't get in that top 10. I'm okay with that. If you want to stack chips on Christian Benford's shoulder, please, by all means. I think he's a top end player, and all the defensive guys that I've talked to, you know, he might have trended a little bit down last year from previous years, but I'm still buying stock on Christian Benford.
I'm glad you mentioned Kilgore. You heard me make a sound. I definitely do this, like you're saying, like, oh, I hope I'm not just getting carried away. I it happens to me. Since Kyle Hamilton showed up, I wanted Emin Wurrie two drafts ago and see what he's done in Seattle. And Kilgore is not that guy, athletic profile-wise entirely, but a Joker-type guy that I'm just going to move. Oh, is he playing safety? Is he playing slot corner? Is he playing linebacker? Like, where is he? I love having a guy that you can use like that. I always get lost in it, and I do think the trend in the league is toward that sort of player. So hopefully Leonard has plans for him.
You know who's another sneaky guy that kind of fits that mold a little bit, and I think they misused him under McDermott, is I think Jordan Hancock can be another one of those type of guys that can be a weapon. I don't think he's a true safety, and so when they lined him up to play safety, I think that wasn't a benefit to him. I think he's a guy that can be almost like what Cam Lewis was, but I think better. So both those guys are young, good players that I'm excited that a creative mind like Jim Leonard, who has a background as a defensive back, is going to utilize to their fullest potential.
All right, so linebacker. I don't know how much time you want to spend here, but Bernard shook me up last year. I loved him coming in, replacing Edmonds, and we saw like splash plays right away, and like, okay, that's our guy, but he's so undersized, and I feel like he's taken a beating, and I just wonder if, you know, that hasn't cost him some of his speed and explosiveness.
It could. I don't know. You definitely could see the injury was impactful a year ago, right? And I think that He even kind of mentioned trying to play through some of that stuff almost to, a detriment to the team, which isn't good. He sort of talked about that this year. I am expecting, if healthy, that he's going to fit this defense actually really well. I think Jim Leonard's, while it isn't replicated from like a Baylor defense, it's got some elements of what he was doing in Baylor. So I think he's going to have a good feel for this defense. I still think he's a playmaker. I think this is a guy that you want to get out in space to go make plays on the ball, and I think that Jim Leonard's going to try to utilize that. And even as a pass rusher, it was some of those different creeper pressures, different things, looks like that, I think that he's going to be impactful there. It's the matter of, do you think Terrell Bernard can stay healthy? I have a tough time with this one Bulldog. I tend not to believe in injury prone. Mm-hmm. I know some guys go through bouts in their careers where they definitely stack up some injuries, and he's kind of right on the cusp of being one of those guys that stacked up a couple injuries here recently and starting to get that label. This is a big year for him to prove it. There's a few guys like that on the Bills roster, but this will be a big one for him to prove it, because I think this room of the linebacker room really revolves around him, right? I think we can talk about Dorian Williams or Elam Orr as another linebacker, but Terrell Bernard's going to be the one that really kind of stirs the drink in the middle of that defense.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Elam Orr, I don't want to assume he's a fourth-round pick. Maybe he can show up and outplay Williams and get on the field, and it'll be a strength for them. But it feels a little bit risky to me to assume that.
Yeah, he's a freak athlete, so I understand fans clamoring for it. And obviously, the way Jim Leonard spoke about him, granted, Dorian Williams wasn't in those activities early on in this part of the season, so he did jump him in those things and was taking reps with the starters. So I understand fans are excited. I actually hearkened back to when Matt Milano was drafted on the show the other night and the Ramon Humber situation, right? Ramon Humber, I think, was the starter for about six, seven, because I'll get killed by my kids, but 6 or 7 weeks here that season. And Matt Milano started to come in and become the starter. I could see a situation play out where Dorian Williams is the starter to start the year. He's still a good player. I know people are down on him, but I think he's a fine football player and can play that weak side good enough at a mediocre level. But he's a high-end special teams player, so he's going to earn himself a spot here. And then as the season goes on, I could see maybe the rookie taking over some of those reps as you get into the postseason.
I think the show is going to need to be pulled over, Aaron, because we've just spent 20 minutes talking about the Bills and have not talked about the offense at all. Just entirely on the defensive side.
Well, we know what to expect, you know, right?
Well, let me ask you about DJ Moore's ceiling. That, and then I want a quick take from you on if you're at all interested in Brandon Cooks or anyone else for that matter, but that's the name that's certainly out there. What about Moore? Do you think we're talking about a 1,100 yard guy, or do you think the Bills have forgotten how to feed a number one receiver?
So this was an interesting one, because when Greg and I were doing kind of like our wish list and free agent shows and stuff, I had my eyes on Moore, and in talking to Greg a little bit, we were kind of like, man, I don't see how Brandon Bean can pull off a move like this. That's a big contract. I don't know where he gets the money to kind of make this deal happen. And it was like 2 weeks later, he makes the deal happen. And I loved the player. So that was kind of my take, was, hey, I think this is too expensive. And I know a lot of people probably still felt that way. Even today, they feel it's too expensive. But the player itself, if you take away the compensation, I love the fit. I love the player. I think he's super underrated in terms of the national media. I think it was Ryan Clark talking about why the Broncos were better because they added Jaylen Waddle. I think DJ Moore is just as good as Jaylen Waddle without the injury history, right? Like, he plays through those things. So I think he's a great fit. I think Josh Allen is dying for a guy that he can rely on and feed. So I do think he'll get targets, but more importantly, Bulldog, I think this is finally an opportunity for them to have a guy that pulls some real gravity away. So even if he's not getting huge numbers in production, defensive coordinators are going to want to know where DJ Moore is on the field, because he can be played inside. He can go outside and win. You're going to have to know where he is. And I think that opens up stuff for Khalil Shakir in the middle of the field. I think that was a struggle for Shakir, especially when Kincaid wasn't on the field last year. You didn't have anyone really threatening the defense in a way where they could pull some attention away from the middle of the field in that seam. I think that DJ Moore is going to pull some of that attention, and it's going to open up things for a guy like Dalton Kincaid and for a guy like Khalil Shakir. So again, even if he's not incredibly productive or his production continues to dip as his career ages out. I think just his presence on the field as a legitimate threat to be a number one type mm-hmm. wide receiver or a low-end one is a huge benefit for this Bills team.
And a quick take on Brandon Cooks before you sail off into your weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Brandon Cooks. And again, in free agency, he was one of those guys where if the draft didn't work out the way you wanted, sure, bring in Brandon Cooks to compete. I don't see a spot for him on the roster as it stands outside of practice squad unless you were able to get convince some team to take on Joshua Palmer's contract in a trade or maybe trade Keon Coleman if that was somehow available. Mm-hmm. But if Keon and Palmer are both on this roster, I just don't see where you bring in a guy at Cooks' age with his declining skill, even though I liked what he brought last year, he's not playing special teams, right? So you can't have a lot of those guys that are just sitting as your wide receiver five aren't really playing. The only path I can see as the roster stands now is if he's willing to hang out as a practice squad guy who's willing to be called up in case of emergency.
You might need to sign him before you do any of that, though. I wonder, like, if he's eager to get to camp. I thought it was interesting in the Tim Graham Athletic piece.
He did, yeah.
That he wants to go to camp. Like, without having read that, I'm glad that Tim, you know, got that information because I would have sat in here going, he'll probably just wait until mid-August. But it sounds to me like that dude wants to go put the time in. So. I mean,
if he wants to get into the Bills camp and not have anything guaranteed to him, I would absolutely throw him in there because injuries are going to happen. He is a good player. He's a good vet. I'd like him to, you know, a guy like Skylar Bell would benefit a ton from having a guy like that in the room. So I'm all for it. I don't know if he would find a way to crack that active roster unless an injury or a trade occurred.
Yep. All right, Aaron. Excellent job as always. Enjoyed the visit very much. Where are we finding all of the stuff?
Yeah, man, Cover One, go to YouTube, find us, join us at coverone.net/onepass. We're doing a lot of stuff. Our buddy Anthony Prasco was just on ESPN the other day, but
he was on Mina Kimes' show, right?
Yes.
That's great. Good for you guys, man. I really like her work a lot, and that's an excellent landing spot, man. That's really
cool. She's fantastic, and she shouted out the network. Check us out on YouTube if you haven't yet. Give us a like. We're out there working hard. This is a tough time of year, as you know, Bulldog, to talk about football when not a whole lot's going on. So, well, all the support we can get, we appreciate.
Well, I appreciate you helping me do exactly that for the last 20 minutes or so, buddy. All right, have a great weekend, and we'll catch up.
All right, take care. Enjoy vacation, bud.
All right. That's Aaron Quinn from Cover One on the West Her Hotline with us. Excellent work they do. 803-0550. Anything there you want to get into? I'll certainly share some thoughts on, well, mostly where we ended, go figure, on the receiving corps. We'll get to that. But certainly anything else goes. If you're up for it at 803-0550, please feel free to give us a buzz. Mike is away this week. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, it's the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Rolling along here on a busy Friday. Busy, I mean, guest list wise. There's not, like, other than the World Cup, there's not a whole ton popping in the sports world on this summer Friday. But we are keeping things rolling along here into the 4 o'clock hour with our buddy Paul Hamilton on the West Her Hotline to pour over more off-season moves and moves not made in the NHL. Paul, good afternoon. How are you, buddy?
I'm well. How are you today?
I'm good. Are you? You are going to see some music tonight. Is that right?
Well, I had a choice between Little Big Town, or which I've seen quite often, or the Femmes of Rock, who I've seen a couple of times. So I decided to go to Art Park with the Femmes of Rock, who are. It's a very, very unique show. Very enjoyable show. It's, I think, the third or fourth time I've seen them, and I've liked them every time.
All right, excellent. I have a suggestion for you, and it involves a band. I've mentioned this band Grosh to you before.
Yes.
Local act.
I've started looking for their, so I'm going to get there at some point. I started looking for when they are playing and if it matches my schedule.
They are playing, they do this a time a year or so, I think. They're doing a Zeppelin tribute set tomorrow night at Sportsman's Park Actually, that's like 5 o'clock, I think, 7 o'clock showtime. So, yeah, tomorrow night, which is adjacent to the Sportsman's Tavern on Amherst Street in Buffalo. And highly recommend to Paul or anyone else out there. I know you're going to a concert tonight, so maybe you don't want to do the same thing. But really cool scene there. $20, bring a lawn chair. There's, you know, drinks and food trucks and whatnot. And they will absolutely kill it. The guitar player, Grace, is one of the best guitar players in the city. The vocalist, Megan Brown, is tremendous. They're great. Highly recommend that show for anyone out there tomorrow at Sportsman's.
Well, my schedule opened up around 11 o'clock this morning. I was supposed to do something tomorrow, and unfortunately it kind of changed where I wouldn't be able to do it. So it is definitely a possibility now, right, where it would not have been had my schedule not opened up.
Let's put it on the list. All right. Enough of that, Paul. So I put up a poll earlier today. These things we know are not scientific. What I think you and I are in agreement here. The number one center spot on this team, the Sabres, I think, as much as I want to get excited about Yuri Kulik coming back, and I like Josh Norris, I still think like Dylan Larkin would be the prize if you could somehow make it happen, but I don't think either of us are optimistic that it will. So I don't know what to do about it, but I think objectively, if I were looking at the Sabre roster right now, I think that would still be the thing that I would be most focused on them lacking, is like someone that I can count on to be a point a game guy and play the games. Like, I think Norris could be close to that if he could play all the games. We'll see about Kulik coming back off a year off. But, man, I think that's still the biggest hole I see on the roster.
Yeah, it is. And I see Larkin now has expanded to 4 teams.
Dallas is on the list.
Yeah. So,
congrats.
And I think if he wants to be traded, he probably is going to have to expand to more than 4 teams. You know, the Buffalo Sabres obviously are not on his list yet as far as a team that he'd be willing to go to. That doesn't mean they would not eventually be on that list. That's the guy right there that I would be looking at. Of course, I'd be interested in Robertson, but not at $15 million a year. I just don't think he's that guy. Mm-hmm. I would definitely overpay for Dylan Larkin if that's what it were to take. That's the guy I would overpay for. But he has to loosen his – that's the thing. You want to be traded, but you basically are telling the Red Wings, yeah, but here, I'll tell you where you can trade me,
yeah,
and good luck with
you
that.
You want the team to untie your hands while you tie theirs with the same rope,
yeah,
basically, is what Dylan Larkin's trying to pull. And the other thing that's really interesting about his situation, Paul, like a lot of these things that come to a head, it's, you know, a year or two off. Like, Werenski hasn't been traded yet. We'll see if he ever does, like during this cycle, I mean. But he's got 2 years left, but there's concern that he won't re-sign. Tkachuk was the same way in Ottawa. Like, it wasn't at the deadline yet, but it was, yeah, I'm not going to engage in another contract with you guys, so you should just get the best deal you can now. And there's leverage in that. There's power in that. Larkin has 5 years left. Like, I think that makes it very tough for him to give them so little to work with, because I think his leverage is really lacking.
No, I agree. I mean, and, you know, the other teams have a salary cap they have to, you know, abide by also. Does the team that he wants to go to have cap space? Or do they need a centerman, even though he's a very good centerman? Are they all set at center? Is he a guy maybe they really don't need? Maybe he thinks he needs to go there, but they may be looking at going, well, you know, thanks, you're a great player, but we're all set as far as that goes. I just think it's not for sure, but I think it's a pretty good possibility. He's going to have to loosen things up a little bit if that's what if he wants to be traded. Otherwise, he's going to wind up another year with the Detroit Red Wings, and how will that roll?
Yeah, and I wonder how much that changes even in another year, because he'll still have 4 years left next offseason. And, like, he just – I think it's a weird – he's gone about it in a strange way, I guess I would say.
Yeah. But,
and yeah, he doesn't
call
have
your teammates when you've basically said, I don't want to be here anymore, you know, but you're stuck here and you're they haven't traded you, and here you are on opening night, but you've said you don't want to be here. You know, how does that go over?
Yeah, no, especially for the captain, right? I mean, yeah. just a tough scene. Paul Hamilton on the West Hur Hotline. So I had this poll, like what the Sabres need. Simple question. The Sabres need, right? Number one center, veteran replacement for Tuck, a goaltender upgrade, or like trust the kids. Those were the choices. And a couple of people replied to me like, "Hey, you left off the most glaring one, which is another D." And I think you and I are in agreement here. I think they're done with their defense corps right now. Like, right? I mean, I think Zellweger and Crevier, I think, are nice adds. You and I have gone back and forth a couple times on who's going to play where. But either way, like, those two guys are in their top six, I think. And I like the Zellweger bet. And Kekalainen even said they like the potential of him replacing some of what Byram gave them, if not all of what Byram gave them. So I think the decor, I'm buying that. I think that's a good bet, Zellweger especially, and I'm intrigued by the Crevier kid too.
And if you have an injury, Metz is around still, and he showed us last year that he's just fine in the National Hockey League. So Metz is around. Timmins is a penalty killer. I'm not extremely thrilled with him as at 5-5-5, but, you know, see, so you got the two of them too. So, yeah, definitely I agree with you that defense. I saw the early part of your poll. I don't know if it's changed. I know goaltending was the number one thing at the time. I think people are a little too crazed over how bad the goaltending is. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's my opinion. I don't think it's as bad as some people let on that it is. So again, I'm not saying that Hellebuck can't return to form after one bad year. He might. We don't know. But he did have the one bad year, so we don't know if that means he's on the way down or if it was just 1 year. And that's an $8.5 million bet that you're making, that it was just 1 year if you do acquire him, plus whatever you have to trade to get him. Lukanen was better last year. It's simple as that. Lukanen, I think too many people forget what he did for a long, long period of time from December, both Lukanen and Lyon, from December towards the end of the season. And even in the playoffs, I mean, they don't win the game in Montreal that they had to win without him. I mean, he was great in that game. And game seven, I didn't mind him either in game seven. I thought he was fine. I just don't think he's as bad as people make him out to be, and I think there are a lot more problems on this team than Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
Yeah, goalie upgrade is slightly edging out number one center, 33.5% to 32.7. Vet replacement for Tuck is 23.3, and then trust the kids, not surprisingly, lagging in fourth place at 10.4. Yeah, you know, the goalie thing to me, Paul, has largely been like I think when we started pondering the offseason and what moves could get made and started sitting with the possibility that Hellebuck might be available, I was mostly a no. I don't want to spend the assets. I don't want to spend the money at 33 years of age. Like, I'm just not sure. But we get through like the draft and free agency, and you know, Robert Thomas isn't getting traded. Dylan Larkin isn't on our list. We couldn't find a way to acquire Matthew Knies to replace Tuck. I end up sort of settling on, well, I guess I could try to upgrade goaltending. And I'm not sure the Sabres view it that way, but that was the pecking order for me. And I feel like I'm sort of left with my last resort type thinking, all right, try the goalie thing. Because I want to do something, I think. And I don't know, that probably isn't good process.
You're right. In my opinion, just the thing of let's do something, and then do something that, and again, you are trading for a goaltender coming off a bad year. Simple as that. And again, it might just been 1 year, but do you want to take that chance? I mean, are you really improving your goaltending? Might be. Then again, you might not be. And then you gave up those assets, and you're stuck with an $8.5 million goaltender, which I'm not crazy about either, to upgrade a thing that I don't think is as bad as people make it out to be. So, I am still in the camp of that's not the direction I would head in unless the Sabres could get him for a song, and maybe Winnipeg could keep some money, or I don't know. It just I think it's an awfully big chance on a guy who also has not been a playoff performer recently. And, you know, what has he done for – I mean, Winnipeg were the President's Trophy winners. Where did having the best goalie in the world get him?
Yep. Well, agreed. And I've said quite a few times this week that, yes, you know, in 13 playoff games we had a, you know – it was Lukanen, then Lyon, then Lukanen again, then Lyon again, then Lukanen again. It was, you know, it was a little scattershot. But in the regular season, the two of them, plus really even Ellis, like, I think it was a strength of the team. Like, they rated very favorably in goals saved above expected, both guys. Mm-hmm. Lyon more so than Lukanen, but Lukanen was certainly very good in that regard too. So it's one of those recency things, right? Like, I got to do it in the playoffs. And in the playoffs, they were, you know, each guy got pulled multiple times. How much do I want to trust it? So I think that's really circles you back to the conversation, even having legs at all. Paul Hamilton on the West Hur Hotline with us. All right, I said we were going to spend some time on some of the other teams, and I'm sure you've prepared diligently for that. Let's just quickly, I think Florida is going to be back. They made the huge move to get Brady Tkachuk. They're betting on Jacob Markstrom, and that might be sketchy. Talk about goalies, right? I don't know how that'll work for them, but they're going that route instead of staying with Bobrovsky. I think that's a team that'll be right back at the top of the Atlantic again.
Yeah, and Schmidt is also going to be in goal for them from Vegas, so those are their two goaltenders. Markstrom, 2 years ago, you would have said, oh, good job. You got a good goaltender there. But he's had a couple of years now that have been subpar. We all know Brady Tkachuk. The problem with Brady Tkachuk is he sits in the penalty box too much. I mean, and I remember saying this with Brian. Anytime they played Ottawa, I go, this guy sits in the penalty box half the night taking stupid penalties. And then against Buffalo, he would take the dumbest penalties, and you're just like, what are you doing? You can't take that penalty as the captain of this team. They need you on the ice. They do not need you in the penalty box. You know, does he learn that in Florida? I don't know, but and then, you know, it's like, well, and then after that, let's goon it up. We got to get Gudas and Hathaway.
Yep.
You know, let's get back to the 70s and the Broad Street Bullies and everything. So, I don't know. Markstrom is definitely a question mark.
That's the biggest question mark, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Where does he take them? If he plays like he did a couple years ago, they're going to be in good shape again. Plus, you know, the guys that they've gotten back that didn't trade for, that didn't play hardly at all last year. You know, their captain is back, and he's huge to be in their lineup. I mean, absolutely huge, Barkov.
Yeah.
I mean,
and even was back enough to play. He played in the World Championships.
Yeah.
I mean, Hellenius was on a line with him somewhat frequently, I think.
Of all those other guys I mentioned, Barkov means more to them than any of the rest of them do.
Yeah, I agree, too.
You know, so, yeah, that's for Florida. I mean, and I got Tampa Bay right under them. You got three defensemen who are 35 years old and older, but you picked up Carlson.
Right.
What has he got left in the tank? We'll see. You know, so, and they really haven't done, they got Radish. But again, that's an offensive type of defenseman.
Well, they moved him to Toronto.
They moved him. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's what I meant. Carlson for Radish.
Right.
I just misspoke.
That's a bet. I'm all right with that bet.
Like, because Carlson's a better defender, actual
all-around
defenseman.
Player. Yes,
right.
I think. And Radish, I'm not down on Radish. I think Radish got paid about what he should get paid off of the year he had. And even if he regresses to like 15 goals and 50 points, I think $8.5 million, like, that's the going rate. I think Toronto did all right there. But Tampa, I like the bet for Carlson to at least bridge the gap for a bit here and see what's left there.
But how much better did Tampa get by getting Radish? I don't know.
The Toronto, you mean.
Toronto. I'm sorry, Toronto. I got Tampa on the mind. How much better did Toronto get by getting Radish? I mean, they also got Bobrovsky, but we don't know what that's going to turn into. If it's what it was the past year or so, not going to turn into much. And then McKenna, you don't know what a first overall pick. Some of them start off and are really, really good. Some of them need a little bit of seasoning before they're really, really good. So, yeah, you got Bobrovsky and you got Radish and you got McKenna. how much better does that actually make you?
Yeah, they did remake their bottom six. I think they'll be faster and maybe defensively a little better. But yeah, I'm not worried about them. Like, I started with Florida, and you brought in right into Tampa, which is fine, because those are teams that I think I expect to be battling at the top. Toronto, I think, is still behind the Sabres here, and maybe behind everybody else, too. Like, I don't think they've improved enough to be a team that's even in the wild card mix. I mean, we'll see how it shakes out. I'm curious about Montreal. I feel like they maybe have been a little bit quieter, it feels like. But you know,
very quiet.
That's okay. I mean, they've got a lot of really nice young players there who've already played. Like, you know, they decided to pay Demidov. They've got a contract already for Hudson. They paid a goalie. They paid Dobis, although I still think the other guy's going to be better than him, Fowler, in the long run. So Montreal's mostly – they're more like the Sabres. They're sort of standing still here. But I still like a lot of what they've got there.
Yeah, they took the Kevin Adams way of doing things. Sign your own, which is what they spent the offseason doing. And they did. They signed them to reasonable contracts. You know, so really didn't do much else other than that. Gallagher wasn't playing anyway. So, you know, he's gone. I believe he went to Vancouver, if I'm going by memory here. And
that's right.
They basically went with the model of, these are our players. These are the guys we like. These are the guys that got us where we're going to go. They're still young. Let's get these guys signed. Let's get these guys part of the group now. And that's been their off season so far.
Well, we know we already covered Tkachuk leaving and going to Florida, and we talked about Florida. Ottawa, it feels to me like, is in a, I don't want to say tailspin, but I mean they were forced at gunpoint to trade their captain.
Right.
I just think that's going to be hard to recover from in 1 year, I think.
I do like William Eklund. I think that's a good get for them.
Yep.
They still have Stützle and Batherson. Giroux's back. Shane Pinto's a nice player. Dylan Cousins, whatever you want to say about him, he put some points up on the board last year.
He had the year we were waiting for him to have again last year.
He put some points up on the board last year. So they still have those guys. They got Sanderson at the blue line. I'm not crazy at all about Ersson. I don't know why they thought that was a good idea. But I guess they thought it was a good idea. But I do like Eklund. I thought that was a good get for them.
And the Bruins. I've been waiting to talk to you about the Bruins, Paul, because I heard you on draft night after the trade they made with Utah to pick up Paterka, and you were just, I mean, guns blazing on J.J. Paterka. Like, tell us how you really feel is how I felt sitting in my truck. It was one of those I parked, and I was just sitting because you were just going, and I'm like, I got to hear all of this. And, like, I get it. I mean, it obviously didn't work. I mean, holy cow, Utah traded Josh Stone and Kesselring for him, and then they just bailed out after 1 year.
And then
year.
They signed him for what, 7.7 somewhere in there?
Yeah, it's over 7, and it wasn't long, maybe 5 years, I think. It's not a big, long deal, but still, they made a commitment and just pulled the chute. All that said, I love him. If Boston can stand his defensive shortcomings, which is a lot to say, I know, I think he'll score 35 to 40 goals playing with Pasternak. I think that is going to be excellent for them.
He better get to 40 with as bad as he is defensively.
Yep.
I mean, he can score 30, but I have no use for him as a 30-goal scorer if he doesn't improve as a two-way hockey player, because he absolutely kills them. He killed Utah last year to the point where they took him out of their top six. It's like, surprise, where do you guys have scouts? Do you actually scout a team before you stupidly trade Doan and Kesselring for some guy? I mean, what is wrong with you people? But to their credit, they got out from under what might have been the worst trade in team history. Plus, I'm including Arizona too, as well as maybe the worst contract you wrangled in team history. Somehow you got out of it and got first round picks out of it. So I'm like, okay, good job. Yep. I'm impressed. I'm impressed that you admitted your mistake, how bad it was, and I'm very impressed how you got out of it.
I want to get some action with somebody on him scoring 35 goals. I feel like that's my floor on Paterka. So I like that for them. I was not really bullish on them having staying power, watching them play the Sabres. But, you know, Hagans might be someone to really elevate. And I'm as I've already said, I'm pretty bullish on this Paterka idea. I think it's gonna work out for them. So I'm treating them like they've improved. I think the Bruins. I like what the Bruins have done, even though you hate Paterka.
Yeah.
So
I just don't think he's ever going to learn.
Yeah. Well,
you know that he goes to another team and he's still the same guy.
Try this on.
And the other team's like, yeah, we got to get him out of here.
Yeah. Right. No, I know it looks bad. Try this on. I got a buddy of mine that I see at the bar I hang out at. He's Boston Chris. He's from Boston. He's a Bruins fan. And I saw him last weekend and I said, you know, man, I love this Paterka trade for you. He's like, German coach. He's betting on Marco Sturm, who's a legend in Germany. Like that will bring Paterka. That'll be the come to Jesus on defense meeting for Paterka. And I don't know. We'll see if that works. But one other little piece to throw into the stew for you is maybe the coach. Maybe that'll get Paterka to like dig in and play some defense.
Maybe it is a point to make. You know, having a German coach who can show him to believe in him. Look at what Granato did for Dahlin. Basically, wouldn't say a bad thing about him. It didn't matter if he was any good. Granato, every single time he went to a podium, talked about how great Dahlin was, whether he was or wasn't. And Dahlin really, really appreciated it. And he really got him going. And I give Don Granato all the credit in the world for that.
Do we need to talk about Detroit? We kind of did already, right? When we talked about Larkin,
did
we don't know what's really going to happen there.
Kane's gone, and Will Borgen's on defense for Boston too. So is Clifton. They got a couple of three former Sabres. That's basically their moves.
I wasn't prepared to bring those up as ideas that are helping them, Paul.
Will Borgen will help them. Well, he's a pretty good defenseman.
Okay, all right. Well, enjoy your concert, and maybe you can make it down to the Sportio tomorrow for Grosch.
No, I didn't know about that, so I'm glad you put it on my radar.
Put it on the board. I won't be able to make it. I have plans. I'm spoken for tomorrow.
But it is an outdoor deal.
It's an outdoor show. Yes, there's a little there's a park next door to the Sportsman.
So bring a chair.
Bring a chair and some sunscreen. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, Paul. Thanks a lot for this. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Take care.
That's our Paul Hamilton on the West Her Hotline. His appearance is here on WGR, brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. We'll hit up a timeout here. I don't expect to take calls on J.J. Paterka going off in Boston, so we'll move on. But I will spend some time talking about what Paul and I talked about at the outset of our conversation here, which is the Sabres and, like, do they need to do something still? Like, they're mostly just – I think they've lost more than they've gained is how I would put it. I like the defenseman, but we'll get into it after this. 803-0550 if you're locked and loaded with an opinion or thoughts on the Sabres offseason so far. Now would be a great time at 803-0550. I am the Bulldog. This is WGR.
It's Mike Shope. And the Bulldog.
Coming up after this.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Don't roll your eyes. That was my audition tape for an NFL pregame show. I'm not kidding. That's what that was. That was us making fun of how they laugh at everything and nothing's funny. But they're just like, oh, gosh, you guys.
You know when you can just tell when someone's close to retirement?
Is this going to be about me?
Yeah, you know, like you when the guy is just kind of lost it a little, like you know, like when Jimmy Johnson, he's on Fox, and you're just like, yeah, he's so close.
Yeah.
That's you right now after listening to that open.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm uncomfortable now. Nate Gehring's in for Mike. I am the Bulldog. Happy to – well, we'll just plow right ahead and welcome Joe Yerden in on the Western Hotline. Joe from Bleacher Report, long time on the NHL beat and the Sabres as well. Joe, what is up? How are you doing? How's summer treating you so far, man?
I'm really afraid to laugh at anything now. What I'm really afraid
of. Don't worry, I'm not funny, naturally. So I'm unfunny and it'll be fine. So don't sweat it.
No, it's been a good summer, and I'm glad we don't have the $20 million offer sheets coming through here in Buffalo, because that would make things way too spicy. But yeah, it's nice and easy this summer.
Is a fireable offense for Pat Verbeek? Like I know they've matched it and they're going to keep going, but like, he left himself, like, there's been a lot of reporting. I read a long piece by Greg Wyshynski about them nickel and diming every $10,000 is a battlefield and all this sort of stuff. And coupled with the things that made the rounds right after the offer sheet was signed last week by Leo Carlson, that he would have signed for like eight for nine or whatever it would have been. And now they're at 5 for $18 million a year. I mean, it's just a very, very – he left them in a bad spot, Verbeek.
I think it's, you know, just – and this is all from the outside, and, you know, sometimes what you hear from people chit-chatting about stuff, you know, around the league and whatnot. But just that, based on what you see on the outside, you see what happened with Trevor Zegras in Anaheim and how suddenly he was available, and Jamie Drysdale. And, like, these guys were all, like, young, upcoming, potential star players for Anaheim. And then it was – time for their first contract negotiations, and things got very punchy right away. And it was like, they're coming out of their ELC, man. Like, what's the deal here? Like, why is this so on the outside? I never mind what's going on the inside, but on the outside, it seemed like, what's the hassle? Like, what's the problem here? And both of those guys end up getting traded to Anaheim, you know, not long after. And you're like, okay, what's the deal? What's happening here? And the only common denominator out of that was the GM. And you're like, is this guy just kind of busting everybody's chops about, you know, like what he thinks a guy coming out of that first contract, you know, can make, what they can do, all that. And I think that goes for just about everybody that was a big star player there. You know, Mintikov was another guy that I think even last year it was just kind of like, what's going on? Like, what's the deal here? And, you know, the adjustment period between things being the way it used to be and the way things are headed now changed in their face because of kind of how he was doing things. And, you know, that's, you know, it's not to say that's all on Pat Verbeek's shoulders. Other teams have dealt with this as well, but like, holy smokes, man. Like this, I mean, this went off like a bomb in front of their face. And they're just like, well, we got to kind of eat this.
Yeah.
And, you know, Carlson was Pat's guy. Like that's, you know, he's a number two pick. He's a big player. He's a guy that they've kind of built their future around, and, you know, kind of good on Danny Briere to be like, oh yeah, well, how much does he mean to you? Let's see how bad, right. You know? And, you know, he did it. Now they got to figure it out after the fact. It's really fascinating. And it's really interesting about, you know, and I get it. It's going to cause, you know, reverberations through the league of how you treat guys coming out of those first contracts and whatnot. And you got to decide right away, like, is this a guy we're going to build around forever? Or is this somebody we're going to push that cart down the road and say, all right, you know, maybe in 2 years we have to reexamine this. But I mean, if guys coming out of those ELCs are saying like, I want $9 million a year right away, boy, oh boy. Like it changes everything so quickly.
Yeah, man. I mean, I definitely feel that. I mean, I thought they would match. I thought they kind of had to match. You know, four first-round picks that you might assume will be in the 20s, especially if Carlson is on the Flyers. That's just not – that is not going to get it done. So, but now you've got Carlson, and he's a great piece to build around, and he, you know, maybe he'll hit his ceiling and become, you know, a 90 or 100-point player, but you're paying him double what you could have paid him last year. I mean, it's just – it's insane how that happened, and they left themselves like that. Something that, Joe, the Sabres really have been quite proactive about going back. I mean, Kevin Adams certainly had his warts, but the Tage Thompson contract, the Matias Samuelson contract, and now you're seeing this Owen Power, you're seeing it be played forward by Jarmo Kekäläinen with Zach Benson. You know, you look at the
stats. Andone, right.
Yeah. You look at the stats and go, Benson had 43 points. What am I doing? But, you know, if you watched him all year and you watched him in the playoffs especially, I think you go, okay, that's probably a 55, 60-point player fully formed. And I've got him under contract for 7 years at 7.5. Like, that's, I think that's job well done.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Even going back to Adams, you know, the Tage contract, I think even at the time when Tage signed, everybody goes, well, that's already a steal. And if he becomes a 40-goal-a-year guy, that is a monster steal. And yeah, of course it is. And then, you know, the Samuelson thing, obviously the ups and downs with his career, but if he does what he did last season every year at four and a quarter,
it's the best contract in the league.
Holy cow, man. Yeah. You know, that's crazy. And, you know, you're looking at all this, and, like, obviously the cost of everything is just going to go up every year. You know, every year the cap goes up, the cost of everything just goes up with it. But, I mean, you know, you look at what happened with Doan. You know, Doan gets the opportunity, gets the playing time, gets that chance to show, like, here's what I can do. Because, you know, in Arizona, Utah, whatever, he was, you know, playing third, fourth line minutes and, you know, wasn't really getting a lot of specialized usage. And he was younger. You know, he's coming out of Arizona State, which, you know, no offense to Arizona State, not exactly a hockey hotbed school. So, like, you know, what he does there is kind of, you know, how do you really judge it?
Mm-hmm.
So you get him into the pros and you see what he does in the AHL and you're just like, all right, I know what kind of player he is. That's why, you know, half the people talking about that trade last year were like, well, he's a throw in. And it's like, well, he's not, but, like, we don't know what he is yet. And then turns out what he is a 20-goal-a-year, heart of the team type of dude. And you're like, oh, right. Okay. Well, cool. And in Benson's case, it's, you know, he had what, 43 points, 65 games, I think it was.
Yep.
And you see that and you're like, okay, it's coming. His game's coming along. And then the playoffs happen. And you're like, oh, all right. Okay. Well, let's see if we, you know, my idea was get him at the Doan contract if you can, but if it's like an extra mil, I think you live with it. And that's exactly how it came out. So, you know, things like that, it's just a matter of just like reading where things are headed, how things are going, and what a player's projection is going to be. You know, you're not going to throw that money around at just some, you know, regular old guy. I mean, Leo Carlson's a great player. He had a great, you know, glow up kind of season for Anaheim. And, you know, you see the trajectory he's going on and you're like, okay, we got to pay this guy. We know we have to, but, like, you got to control it too. You can't let somebody else dictate your budget. And I think that's where things kind of got out of hand with Anaheim. And, you know, you let it get away from you for a year. You're like, well, we'll push that cart down the road. We'll do it next year. How much worse could it be? Like, well, now every guy going into that last year of their ELC is going to be having that long conversation with the GM, or maybe they aren't. I don't know. Like, but somebody who's an elite player, they're going to be looking at it in the mirror and going, like, how much are we going to give to this guy and how do we expect him to go?
Before the playoffs, we talked about the, you know, the as much as fun as we were having with the moment and the present, you know, like, well, what's the off season? What are the priorities going to be? And Benson's name came up in here and I said, oh, that's a bridge. It's easy. That's a bridge contract. You're not really sure what his ceiling is yet. And then the playoffs happen and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Lock him up.
Screw that. Right. Yeah. Joe Yurden from Bleacher Report on the Western Hotline with us. So how about the Sabres? Like, are you – the vibe this week that I've mostly gotten, it started on Monday afternoon when I talked to Wyshynski, is that the kingpin guys that we thought would get moved, really none of them have been moved. That's Larkin, that's Hellebuck, that's Jason Robertson. I don't know that Nyes belongs in that conversation. I guess I wish he would because I love him very, very much, almost too much. It hurts, Joe. So might we have a busier July than normal? Because I would think teams are going to, even if they'd be dragged kicking and screaming, are going to want to alleviate situations where guys have asked out.
You know, part of me thinks it was busy enough. Honestly, like, teams just like kind of took care of the business that was out there, but it still feels like a lot was left on the hook. And, you know, part of that's Robertson just because that was such a big deal. It will be a big deal. Whenever, you know, if he signs for 1 year, okay,
fast forward to next summer when we're talking about him again as maybe as a unrestricted free agent, which would be bonkers. You know, and, you know, all the hellebuck stuff from before the draft, during the draft, and, you know, afterwards it cooled off. And, you know, anywhere I go now, folks are like, is this going to get done? Is this happening? And I'm like, I keep thinking, like, the time to get it done was the draft, mm-hmm. Just because the draft picks are whatever you want them to be. And when the draft picks are gone, it's like, well, all right, now we're kind of stuck based on the roster. And then you get past July 1st, and now you got no trade protections on guys. And it's like, okay, well, all right, how do you make this work out of that? It's like making something that could have been very easy into something very difficult. And I think that's maybe the spot we're in with some of these other players that were out there allegedly, you know, reported to be available, whatever, what have you. I think we're in a spot where it's a little bit more difficult because if you're offering roster guys, like, you know, July 1st kind of changes that. And teams, the NHL is so like old school set that everybody wants to get on vacation. Everybody wants to take a couple of months off because it's a 10-month rigor of day in, day out. Let's just try to get things done and figure it out. But I don't know, man. Like, Dylan Larkin's still out there. Jason Robertson will get his stuff figured out. Connor Hellebuck's still in Winnipeg. That's a lot of big fish. It's a lot of big fish who are still out there that could get moved. And there's teams that can make that happen. And I just wonder, you know, when those GM's phones get turned back on after they've spent some time at the cottage.
Marchenko's another name too, Joe, that's like kind of been out there for Columbus after the whole Werwinski was like, yes, but no. And now I'm dedicated and I'm, you know, moving forward here in Columbus. Yikes. But, you know, I've never been a huge, I know Joe, you know, Sneaky Joe on the morning show has sort of been, you know, ringing the bell for Hellebuck. I'm not sure that I've ever really been fully on board with them, especially trading young assets or even a roster player or two, which is what it sounds like it was, you know, going to take to get Hellebuck. And now I do wonder how much, you know, the Jets maybe have lost a little leverage in this Hellebuck conversation, and Yarmo waiting them out ends up being a nice goal for them and they end up paying less than they would have at the draft. I don't know. But I guess where I get to, Joe, is, you know, we're hearing guys like, you know, Jack Quinn's name being thrown around, Ryan McLeod's name being thrown around. I do wonder that right now they appear to be, and it sounds like Patrick Kane is a potential. They've got a lot of forwards. I don't know that I'm in the camp, Joe, and now you can tell me if you're in this camp or not, that, like, I'm going to move a couple of them and one, whether it's Mertka or one of these other young, you know, players you've drafted the last couple of seasons, but I'm kind of still big fish hunting for a legit number one center and or another scoring winger to replace Tuck rather than the goalie. I don't know if that's where you sit, but it feels like they almost can't be done.
I'm of the same mind. I feel like Buffalo isn't done, which is, you know, I feel like the defense is kind of squirreled away. I think that's kind of done. Forward, you've got a lot of guys, and a lot of them are really young. And, you know, a lot of, you know, I think the big catch here is that Lindy likes a lot of them. You know, he really likes Noah Osland. Who doesn't? I think he really likes Konstantin Hellenius. Who wouldn't? When you've got guys like that, and he speaks very highly of Yuri Kulik, which, you know, hey, if he's ready to play, then cool. Let's go. Let's see what he's got. But it's a lot of guys. It's a lot of guys, and you have a lot of kind of questions. And I think the playoffs left you with a lot of questions as well, based on some guys' performances. Maybe it's like Ryan McLeod was a guy where I was like, boy, he would have liked to have seen more from him during the postseason. I think that would have been helpful. In Quinn's case, I think you may be looking ahead to maybe another, you know, what his next contract's going to look like. And, you know, given where things are going, I don't know if I like the future, what that could turn out to be. But I think maybe you have to start, and this is the thing for the GMs, they have to start getting their ducks in a row here, like maybe 2 years in advance, 3 years in advance, start looking ahead to, like, what's this, you know, what's a guy going to cost? Where do we see our holes in the lineup developing, and where do we think things are going to go? And I think that's a lot where like Yarmo Kekalainen's got to kind of look at things and see where it's headed. And maybe that's why things are kind of in that quiet space where it's a little too quiet, you know?
Yeah. You know, what is your perception of the what is the Kane thing right now? Is it wishful thinking based in South Buffalo? Like people start talking there and it just sort of gets trapped. I'm not being jerky about it. I mean, he's popular in that part of town, maybe popular all over town. Like it's an interesting idea. I'm just not sure if it's all not dot connecting because Here's the thing. I mean, we're talking about all these forwards. Joe, like I sat here on free agency day and I did the lines like a little kid would do, and I forgot Osland. I didn't have a spot for Osland. I mean, I don't want to put him at fourth line center. That seems stupid. So I've got Carrick there, and now what am I doing? So yesterday I think I stumbled into, okay, if the Hellebuck thing is still percolating – I don't know if I can include Luukkonen in that anymore. I mean, he's now got five team no trade. I don't know who those five teams are, but I might guess that one of them is Winnipeg. I don't know. So like you've muddied that up. So you get to like, you just mentioned two of the guys, McLeod, Quinn, Mertka, something else for Hellebuck. And now I put Patrick Kane in Quinn's spot and I put Osland in McLeod's spot and I'm done. There's my team.
Yeah.
All I got to do is make these two, complete these two transactions. One of which I think the Sabres have been working on for a month.
You know, I'll confess something to you right now. What you've penciled out is something that I've had in my head for maybe about since this Hellebuck stuff really started kicking into gear. As far as like a foundation of a trade to acquire a guy like Connor Hellebuck, it's my own roster machination sort of ideas. Mm-hmm. But if you're moving, if you're going to move a Quinn, you're going to move in a McLeod, and it's probably not Luukkonen, so you probably have to move Lyon, which then you're investing a lot of money into goaltending at that point. But you're talking about moving out a lot of salary, but also having to probably take out, Hellebuck's $8 million. You probably have to add another bit of salary on top of that and maybe signing Kane. So I was thinking, maybe you're asking for Eden's Alex Iafallo to be part of that deal or something like that, something along those lines where you're just, and again, this isn't based on conversations. This isn't based on any sort of, information from the inside. This is just like
staring at the roster.
This is basically in between. This is like halftime of a Newcastle game at Fatty. This is basically the same conversation. Yes.
This is just so we don't get radioed on this one. So it's, so it's everywhere, but
that's correct. Yes, right.
But it's, that's kind of like the framework where I'm like, maybe that's an idea that, that gets the conversation going again. You probably have to give up some prospects. You probably have to give up multiple prospects.
Gotta be
something
that's going to hurt, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not that Mertka wouldn't hurt, but like something that's going to hurt.
Right. And a guy like Mertka would hurt a lot. Like that's a guy you're looking at being a top four guy at some point in the future. Maybe that's why you draft Dax and Rudolph. Maybe that's because you're kind of softening the blow to move a guy like Mertka, and then you're just kind of rewinding it like that. But to me, to get a guy like Kane in Buffalo, and I'm sure a lot of that conversation reverberates around Imperial Pizza down in South Buffalo. But I think the idea is I don't think it's as outrageous as it has been the last couple of summers where he's been available, because the Sabres were not a playoff team. They were not, let's be honest, they were not close to looking like a playoff team, but now it's like, oh, they made it to the second round. They were a whisper away from the conference finals. They're for real. And let's face it, Patrick Kane wants to play in the playoffs again. That's why he went to Detroit. Detroit's been close. Now they don't look like they're that close, especially if they move Dylan Larkin. So if he can come home and it's available and it's open to him, I think he would love that. But, I think we know what Kane's abilities and skills are. Great offensively, great on the power play, great on all that. The rest of it might drive Lindy a little crazy, but, I think for what he can do and what he can add to a power play, I think that's something everybody would agree is something that could help the Sabres out too.
So I know you've mentioned Dylan Larkin's name a couple of times since we've had you on, and I think Bulldog and I are both in the same camp. I know a lot of people. I don't think it's even on the table for Dylan Larkin. He's best friends with Jack Eichel, and it just does not appear to me to be something like a move that the Sabres could really swing. So I want to ask you more about just the general situation in Detroit right now and kind of the position that Larkin has put that franchise in, because he's got term left. He does not have the same situation, you know, some of these other guys,
Werenski, where
they're a year from, you know, a big payday. And if they're not signing, it's time to, you know, it's the fire is lit. For me, but like, you know, if you're moving Larkin and Kane's out the door and DeBrincat is in a position where he's a year away from UFA. So what do you make of Detroit and the position Steve Yzerman's in?
It's messy.
Maybe they missed their window, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, they've had such bad runs at the end of the season the last 2-3 years where, you know, you're 2 months out from the end of the season, you're thinking like, oh, Detroit's back. They're going to get there. And then just the wheels completely come off. And, you know, it happened again last season. It's happened to them every year now for 3 years. And in Larkin's case, I think, you know, the Olympic success and then just being like, man, I don't like where this is headed. This is, you know, it's going to be the same stuff every year. Get me out of here. I think in his case, like limiting it to just a couple of teams makes it really hard to get out of there. And like, listen, I know you want to control your destiny, and you can do that to a degree, but boy, oh boy, man, like to just be like, yeah, Minnesota or Vegas, like that's it. Like I two capped out teams that have lots of guys on no moves. Good luck, dude.
Yeah.
And I think Yzerman, you know, listen, Yzerman's not a guy I would want to be on the wrong side of, based on his playing career and how intimidating he can be. To draw a line with a guy like that who has to feel pretty emboldened at his position as an executive in with the team where his number's hanging in the rafters, I have to imagine him saying like, well, we're not going to move him if we don't have to, which is a heck of a thing to say for a guy that's like, yeah, get me out of here. It's a really bad spot for Dylan, because you're looking at a guy who's probably going to get the C ripped off his chest and might get booed opening night in Detroit. And I don't like that at all, honestly. But like, what's he going to do? He can't hold out. He can't do any of that. So, I mean, if he doesn't show up, I mean, you're going to get fined every day. And then I don't know if I'm Vegas or Minnesota, I'm like, well, I guess he wants to come here, but like, do I want him? I don't know.
The five years is a thing. Like, yeah. I wonder, like, I'm sure he got advice ahead of time. It's not something that you would have done willy-nilly here. Just like, I'm going to just tell him I want out, or I'm going to leak it or whatever. But I'm just imagining him and his agent sitting on a dock somewhere in Ontario enjoying a sunset, and his agent just... Dude, you got 5 years.
Like, yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Maybe we brought in this to
only
five teams.
So much I can do. He did add Dallas today.
He did add Dallas.
So let's give him some credit. I mean, at least he did that. So generous.
It's crazy to add Dallas, because it's like, hey, man, we just cleared a lot of space to sign our other superstar guy for like $15 million a year.
Right,
so like,
right.
I don't know if we got the room for you here, pal. To me, it's the kind of thing where – I think if I'm in Yzerman's spot, I'm like, well, how desperate do you want to be? Are you desperate enough that you want us to mutually agree to nullify a massive contract, cost yourself all these millions of dollars, and then you sign for dirt cheap with one of these teams, and then hope that maybe you go to the playoffs, win a Stanley Cup, whatever. Like,
That's not happening, right?
That's never happened. You'd never throw away, like, what, 30, 35, 40 million, like, whatever, I forget what his contract is, but, like, that's a ton of money. You're not throwing away. We're not talking Patrick Berglund going to Sweden and saying, forget it, I'm never coming back.
Right, like, right.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about a guy that wants to play somewhere else in the same league the next season with the same money.
All right, Joe. Well, let's all cross our fingers and toes and hope for some more news, which would mean more reason to call you again.
I'm all for it.
Thoroughly enjoyed this. I'm glad we didn't have to pull you away from soccer like we did so rudely the last time you were on with us. And by the way, if you're not, you're probably watching while you're talking to us. Mbappe just scored an incredible goal to put France up. You're not taping this and watching later, are you, Joe?
No, I'm not a lunatic. No, sorry. I would not.
I was 99% kidding, but I just wanted to make sure. Anyway, thanks a lot for the time, man.
Thanks,
appreciate it. Joe Yerden from the – sorry, it just sounded like he was speaking there and we hung up on him.
You know, it's funny, though. You make that joke. My grandfather recorded every single Yankee game. Every one. and then watched them. I don't know why. You just like, wouldn't watch it live.
Later, yeah.
Later. I mean, a lot of those games are night games.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he was just for the next day. But it would be like we would come over and the first thing he would say is, don't tell me about the Yankees game. And I would say, Gramps, I hate the Yankees. Yeah. I wouldn't know what the score of the Yankees game is. But, you know, that's a different time. Again, you've never seemed closer to retirement. So
it hurts. It's just as simple as that. Mbappe, it was fantastic.
It was
France is
sexy.
Up 1-0 on Morocco in the 63rd minute of their quarterfinal matchup.
It did look like a handball just before.
Mm.
And Morocco was not happy. Like the change of possession,
I did not catch that. You were in the
process of asking a very thought-provoking question. I was watching soccer when that happened. So,
well, we're a good team.
Yeah, truly.
Nate Geary's in for Mike. I am the Bulldog. 803-0550 is the number. We'll be back right after this on W.
Sean McDermott was a very good head coach. This was a very good football team for a long, long time. They fired him and said, that's not good enough. So the ownership is telling you right now, what we did in the past is not good enough. 12-5 and not getting to the Super Bowl is not good enough. So I don't know if there is a head coach in an organization under as much pressure for the right reasons than Joe Brady and the Buffalo Bills, because we all know good is not good enough. He's got to be great. He's got to get this team to a Super Bowl. It doesn't matter what they do in the regular season. They can go 17-0. Nobody cares. What are you going to do once the playoff starts?
Welcome to the
Spin Zone.
Booger McFarland, Nate Geary hive mind.
The Spin Zone.
Did not see that coming in the year 2026, but here we are. Yeah.
The Spin Zone.
I'm sitting with it. I'm sort of contemplating it. Like I think it's funny. Like to me, I totally get that premise. Like you said it before I heard Booger McFarland say it, and I liked it then, because my approach has mostly been kind of pump the brakes. Don't assume everything just continues along because of all the change. And instead, this is, well, the change means the change comes, brings the pressure, which is interesting. Like, I wonder, like, if McDermott hadn't been fired and was still here going into year 10, would the Bills have the most pressure of any team in the league because Sean McDermott's in year 10 and Josh Allen still hasn't been to a Super Bowl? I think yes. So
it's just pressure from a different, it's a different color
McDermott
pressure.
McDermott from the equation, yeah. Put in a rookie head coach, and just assume the same pressure situation, that's a lot, man.
Yeah.
That is a lot. I hope they're up to it. That's a lot, I think. For Allen, for everyone.
First time head coach, first time defensive play caller in the NFL. It's not his first time calling plays, generally speaking. He did it.
In Wisconsin.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of firsts in this group of coaches. Yeah. And, I mean, on top of that, you do have the unknown right now of what DJ Moore is in this offense. There was a predict DJ Moore stat line. And I think I put, like, 88 catches, 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns. People were like, that's insane. Like, I'm like, that's what a number one receiver's numbers are. So is he a number one receiver? Because if he is, that's what you're looking at.
Well, one of the ways I can be talked out of, and believe me, when I sound like I'm pessimistic, it's, you know, I still think, like, I would take 11 wins. I think 11 wins is reasonable and realistic, even with all the concerns I have. The one thing that can get me out of that headspace is the idea that all the new, especially on defense, like, if they can't keep teams down as effectively as mostly they did while McDermott was their coach in the regular season anyway. If they can't play to that consistent level and are forced into a different, like, the focus of the offense becomes a little bit less.
Yep.
I don't think you're ever going to run completely away from James Cook. He led the league in rushing. You were excellent at it. So you're going to want to keep doing a good amount of that. But if they just start leaning a little more because they have to, game script tells you we got to keep up. And that means more throwing. And that means maybe DJ Moore has that kind of season and Josh Allen has, you know, a more explosive year. Maybe that's a thing that sort of keeps them going as a top powerhouse in the AFC.
I keep thinking more and more about 2020. And I think more and more about how that team was built offensively, which was, we don't really have a guy in the running, but we, like, it was Singletary and Zach Moss and, yes, you know, who, right. I don't know, right? And I think TJ Yeldon was moonlighted for a moment.
I don't remember that, but okay. I remember him on the Bills. I'm not sure
if it was,
anyway.
Yeah. But you think about the every level passing attack they had, right? That was early Dawson Knox. It was Cole Beasley. It was John Brown. It was short, intermediate,
and
deep.
And Diggs, of course. Like, and in Diggs, 20, of course. He arrived here in 20.
Right, so you had the number one receiver, the take the top off the defense guy, the runs all the underneath routes, first down, you know, merchant.
Life preserver.
And then,
and
then an opportunistic pass-catching tight end that could get you a lot and could do a lot in the red zone. And I start to look at this team, and you start to see similar parallels to how they are trying to build the thing. And the question I keep coming back to is, and I'm sure I can guarantee when you're at a bar stool at, you know, your favorite North Buffalo, you know, tavern, that you have at least had one person come up to you and say, of the sorts, yeah, but, you know, McDermott was holding Joe Brady back. Joe Brady really wanted to throw the football, but it was McDermott that really wanted to run the football. And the only reason I'm going to give that idea a moment of oxygen is, when was the last time since Sean McDermott's been hired or been fired that you've heard everybody eats?
Well, I think that they with intent have left that.
I think it's done
at a rest stop.
And I just wonder, they left it somewhere in the 90s.
Which is what should have been, which is what should have happened to
him. That was like a funny, fun little 1 year, we're going to get through this together kind of thing. And then year two, I was like, this isn't that cool anymore.
No.
This is not cool anymore.
No.
But I do want to say, like, a little of it is now, okay, well, we got a number one receiver. You start hearing the head coach and offensive play caller, Joe Brady, say they want to move the offense and have it run through Josh Allen again. And I think if they do that, they have, I think, risen their ceiling.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying. Like,
Maybe lower their floor.
My premise is that they're sort of forced at knife point to do it because their defense isn't as good. But however you get there, and if they're there without even seeing the defense play a down yet, then good for them.
Agreed.
Because they should just get over that.
Lean
into Allen.
The prevent defense and hold the ball, it hasn't worked. Not when it matters. It's won them a ton of games in the regular season. And I don't want to just glaze over that and not give credit where credit's due. It has won them a bleep ton of regular season football games. And we can talk about how regular season, at this point, for a lot of Bills fans, doesn't matter anymore. I also think it's sort of the attitude that I've had in games when I'm on after you guys in the post game and a bunch of people, you know, want to call in and tell me I'm just the young Jerry Sullivan because I'm so salty and angry after the Bills win a game. And I'm like, yeah, but like, you beat the Jets by 3. Do you want me to get on the show and
How great was that?
No, you beat the Jets by 3 points. And I think that's really where I've gotten to the point where it's hard. 7 years ago, you could be excited about a 3-point Jets win on the road when in week one, when, you know, John Brown gets that game-winning touchdown. You're like, wow, this is exciting. I've done so many depressing shows that is really cool. But at a certain point, they have less.
It's a lot less impressive.
Juice. Yeah. There's just less juice.
I know, like, someone's waiting to tell you, like, it's hard to win games in our league, like Dick Durano always used to say. But yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, it gets harder and harder. I fight this battle constantly. It's harder and harder to just enjoy the regular season.
Yep.
Because, you know, Mike will reference, he's got the one a friend, acquaintance. I can't wait until we beat Kansas City and I feel nothing. Like in a regular season game. Like that's
I mean, we are definitely close to that.
I feel like that is the definitive, like, I'm numb to how great we are take I think you could ever have.
Yeah.
Because, like, there should be never, ever, ever be anything ordinary about beating the Chiefs, I don't think. But I get it. I mean, it you need to do it in January, not in November, and, you know, they still haven't done it.
Don't do that. So they don't do that.
It's, Yeah, I like this pressure point.
Yeah, it's no pun intended, but pressure point.
I did not mean that at all. I didn't even hear it.
Yeah, I did.
Good thing you're here.
I think
Did. Yeah, right. 803-0550. Let me say the phone number without laughing. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we're just hanging out, talking some football here. I hope that's okay. Nate Geary is in for Mike. Mike Tenier is coming up at the top of the hour. We'll pose this to him. Do the Bills have the most pressure of any team in the NFL? And talk about everything we've been talking about mostly with Mike. Looking forward to that. And then Joe Yurden, we haven't touched base with him, I don't think, since the Sabres. I think we had him on once after the thing ended. But anyway, we'll talk about the lay of the land here and whether there's any reason to think something could be percolating out there still in trade land for the hockey team. That's as we go. But again, 803-0550, lines are wide open. If you're so inclined, Nate Geary in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR.